You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Gregor Chisholm, our MLB.com Blue Jays reporter, as we get into MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition once again. And Gregor, we have one more position to break down as far as the roster goes. That's the catching spot, and we'll throw in DH as well into that mix. But hey, spring training's underway, so let's start right there. You're down in Dunedin. Things are underway, pitchers and catchers getting things going. Any first impressions of this Blue Jays team as they trickle in to Florida?
Well, I think the first impression is that the strength of the team is already here. I mean, this team is really built around the starting five, and the Jays are going to take it a little bit slow with some of their starters this year. They got to kind of keep an eye on Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman and guys like that after the high innings total that they put up last year, but they've reported the camp perfectly fine. The rain should be off once the regular season gets underway, and the Jays are really confident with what they have in their starting five. And the rest, it's going to take a little while to sort out. There's going to be some question marks in that bullpen. I think it's going to take the next few weeks to really kind of settle on some roles and figure out what the configuration is going to look like. But this team's going to have to win from the mound in order to really contend in the American League East, and those are the guys that are in camp right now.
And one interesting decision to make is around Biagini, and you have a story up on the site right now. Is he still the great reliever that he was a year ago, or now that you could send him down to the minors because he's no longer has that Rule 5 rule attached to him, should he go back to a starter role that he had before joining the Blue Jays? What do you think they end up doing?
You know, that's a really good question. I think he's going to end up in the bullpen. I think John Gibbons likes him down there. I think they feel that there's a need for him down there. But it's something that they're going to have to still debate over the next few weeks because, you know, the Jays do have, as I said before, the starting five really locked down, but they don't have any depth really at all to speak of after that. And I think, you know, the concern is what happens if something happens to one of their guys and they get hurt. And so one thing they are going to do this spring, they're going to stretch Biagini out. They're going to, you know, extend his arm a little bit and try and build up some of his workload. My expectation is that by the end of camp, if everything's fine with the current starters, they're going to move him into the bullpen and go forward that way. And once he goes to the bullpen, he'll probably stay there. But this gives them a little bit more flexibility over the next month. They can just take a look at their starting five, see how everything is. And if something happens to one of those guys, then Biagini becomes the clear-cut guy to come in that number five slot.
Yeah, and you could always stretch him back out if need be when that time comes. All right, John Gibbons has spoken a little bit already this spring and a little bit about his contract because, hey, this is the last year of his deal, but he doesn't seem too concerned about it.
No, he doesn't at all. And Gibbons is a very laid-back guy to begin with, but this one is pretty understandable for him to be laid-back about. You know, Ross Atkins was on record at the end of last season saying that they wanted to sign him. The two sides were going to talk at the winter meetings initially. Gibbons had to miss that for personal reasons, and so they didn't end up having the contract negotiations there. And what Gibbons told the front office was, look, you guys got a lot of work to do this offseason. Don't worry about me right now. We can take care of that later. And I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever. I fully expect an extension to be worked out before spring training. I don't think it's going to take very long to do. I think it's one of the last things that the Jays have on their to-do list before the start of the season. But the expectation from both sides is that there's interest and that something will get done.
All right, let's get back into the roster a little bit and the catchers. And obviously Russell Martin was brought in to be a steadying force there behind the plate, and he's been just that in his first 2 years with the Blue Jays. The Canadian native, he's a fan favorite. He kind of checks all the boxes behind the plate. Is there any concern that he's starting to get a little bit older and there may be some regression?
Well, I think the concern is the workload. I mean, last year he had the highest workload he had in about five or six seasons, and you know, that's not really something that you want to see again. I think he's going to benefit from the fact that R.A. Dickey is no longer on this roster, which means the Blue Jays don't have to carry his personal catcher, Josh Tolley. They brought in Jared Saltalamacchia, who's a little bit more of a proven backstop than Tolley is. There's some defensive question marks with Saltalamacchia, but he brings some upside with the bat. And I just think the overall experience there is going to help the Jays in general. And what they really need to do is pick their spots with Saltalamacchia. And I think they need to bring the number of games down for Martin because he simply can't continue that high workload. I mean, we saw last year really took a toll on him, I think, down the stretch. He kind of struggled in September and going into the playoffs. And You know, there was a left knee injury that was one of the reasons, but I think the other reason was just general fatigue from having such a heavy workload. And so I think that's the main concern. Other than that, I think Martin is, you know, he's proven what he is. He's a streaky bat at times. There are weeks where he can help carry a lineup, and then there are times when he goes through a prolonged slump. But the one thing you know you're always going to get from him is obviously the Gold Club caliber defense behind the plate, and that's not going to change. And for a team that's really built around pitching, it's a really nice commodity to have a proven guy like Martin working with that staff.
Salta Lamacchia, veteran guy, obviously won a World Series with the Red Sox, had some great years there, both defensively, and he was good at the plate, at the dish, swinging the bat. That hasn't been the case the last couple of years, but I guess they're not too concerned about getting offense out of that backup catcher role.
Not as much. You know, I think regardless of what Saul Tomlacki is going to be able to do, it should be a better offensive contribution than what Josh Tully was able to do for this team over the last few years. And so I think there's an upgrade there. But you're right. You know, he's certainly a guy who has a track record in the past of being a very good offensive player. But as you said, the last couple of years hasn't quite been there. And I think that's one of the main reasons why Saul Tomlacki had to wait as long as he did to reach a deal. You know, I just talked to him earlier today and said this is he reached the deal in mid to late January. That's the latest he's ever signed a deal before. So there was some uncertainty for him coming into this year, but he had a couple of different offers of the minor league variety that the Jays ultimately offered to him. And I think he took a look at this situation, saw that the back catching job was there up for grabs. And if he were to agree to a deal, it was probably going to be his. And, you know, he was looking forward to getting back into the American League East as well. I mean, his best years came with the Red Sox, really thrived in that environment. And he talked about how much he's looking forward to kind of getting in back into those AL East rivalries that he's so familiar with.
How about the depth beyond those two guys? Who else is there if things don't work out with Salta Lamacchia, or could somebody else step up and kind of steal that from him?
Yeah, you know, the one surprise is the Jays cut ties with A.J. Jimenez before spring training, and that caught me a little bit off guard. They had a numbers crunch with the 40-man roster and needed to make spots for some of the relievers they signed late in the offseason. So Jimenez was the odd man out there, and he was out of options anyways. And so, there was a realistic possibility that they were going to lose him on waivers eventually. But that is a blow to their depth. You know, I think one of the primary guys they'll have as a backup this year is going to be Reese McGuire, a prospect they acquired last year in the Francisco Liriano deal. He's going to be someone to watch. He's not going to win a spot in spring training, but if something were to happen to Martin or Salta Lamacchia during the year, he's going to be someone to really keep an eye on, because he's going to be one of the first lines of defense if that were to happen. But the immediate priority for him is to get him regular at-bats and regular repetitions in the minor leagues.
All right, the designated hitter spot. Obviously, Kendrys Morales signed in the offseason, and he's going to get a lot of time there. How many games do you think Morales spends at DH? Does he become kind of a full-time guy there, or will they use some games to get maybe Jose Bautista off his feet and other guys into that spot?
Well, I think the one thing to watch with Morales this year is, you know, the Jays seem pretty intent on giving him some reps at first base as well. I mean, he's not going to be the first baseman of this team. He's going to get by far the most at-bats at DH. But, you know, getting him over and a little bit acclimatized to first base would open up the occasional possibility where you can put him there and then you can rotate guys in. And to me, that's going to be really key. Morales does have a lot of defensive issues at first base, so it kind of remains to be seen whether or not he's going to be up to the task for that. But if they can get away with him playing some games at first base, it really opens up a lot of possibilities, particularly for a guy like Bautista. There are going to be times you want to get him off his feet in right field, particularly after the injuries he went through last year. To me, that's going to be big for this team, because we saw, you know, prior to last season, the last few years, the Jays had always had that kind of permanent DH, and that really kind of limited the flexibility that they had around the diamond. Last year, when Edwin Encarnacion basically made a full-time transition to first base, that really opened up the possibilities for lots of things. We saw Josh Donaldson get some time at DH last year. We saw Jose Bautista, when he got injured, spend an extended amount of time at DH as well. Those are the type of options and flexibility that this team is going to need. And so it's going to be, obviously, Morales, the first priority is his bat, but if he can provide any kind of value whatsoever with his glove, which is a question mark, that's going to be big for this team.
Great stuff as always, Gregor. Enjoy your time down in Florida. I know you're just getting started. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition. For Gregor Chisholm, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Brittany Giroli, our MLB.com Orioles reporter, who is down in Sarasota, Florida, as the Orioles pitchers and catchers and team reporting down there to spring training, getting ready for the 2017 season. And Brittany, you want it all to be good news this time of year with the team reporting and all of that, but earlier this week, bad news for the Orioles as it comes out that Chris Tillman is going to miss opening day. Can you just give us an update as far as that injury goes and how far into the season it could linger?
Sure. Well, as of right now, he's going to miss opening day, but because of the schedule in the beginning, there's a bunch of off days, he could still be that fifth starter, Tim. They don't need the fifth starter until April 15th, so that buys them some time. It also gives them an opportunity to place him on the disabled list to start the season, maybe take an extra reliever or extra position player on that opening day roster. So a lot of things up in the air. Now, Tillman and the Orioles didn't seem overly concerned that he was going to miss a lot of time. They would rather be cautious with this thing. The shoulder bothered him down the stretch, certainly something they'd like to take care of, which is why he went, got that PRP injection in December. Right now he's playing catch, doing long toss, but they don't have him slated to face hitters until March 17th. So that's the plan as of now. It's a tight schedule for him to be in that rotation. If there is a setback or two, then they'd have to make some decisions when it comes to the rotation. But for now, his rotation spot doesn't seem to be in jeopardy.
That's some good silver lining when you talk about being able to add an extra bullpen arm for the first couple of weeks of the season. Good stuff. How about overall, the vibe there down in Sarasota, Brittany, so far with everybody else reporting? I mean, that's a little bit of bad news. But overall, is that general excitement there that this is going to be a good team in 2017?
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll probably be a little bit more of that tomorrow because guys, you know, pitchers and catchers obviously have been here for a few days working out, but position players reported today, didn't have a formal workout that will start tomorrow. Tonight they kind of have their annual team bonding experience. So I think there'll be a little bit more of that excitement when you can kind of walk into the clubhouse and guys can kind of look around and see most of the team getting ready in the morning. It's been really a fluid thing. But a lot of the position players took it on themselves to be out there today getting ready. Jonathan Scope, Mark Trumbo, Chris Davis, Manny Machado, a lot of the guys out there early. I don't know if excitement is the right word. I think that this group in particular feels like there's a lot of unfinished business. They didn't like the way last season ended. They've pretty much all returning here outside of catcher Matt Wieters. And they really want to go deep into the postseason and to kind of pick up where they left off.
All right, well, we've spent the last month or 6 weeks kind of going through the roster position by position. So let's settle in on the infield. That's the only spot we haven't touched on yet, Brittany. And obviously, it's a very good one when you talk about the Baltimore Orioles all the way around the horn. It's a talented group, and it's a talented group on both sides of the ball. Let's start with defense because obviously there's some guys that can hit in that group. But defensively, how important is the infield to this team when you look at an outfield that obviously they hope is improved but is still not going to be one of the best defensive outfields in baseball by any means?
Sure. I think defense is really what they pride themselves on first. And, you know, we didn't talk about the infield because it's kind of boring. I mean, it's pretty much set. There's no real battles, nothing to watch much of. You know, as long as everybody stays healthy there's not a whole lot of intrigue there, which is a good thing for the Orioles. It is pretty much set. And I think when you look at it defensively, I mean, you got Manny Machado and J.J. Hardy. And then on the other side of the diamond, you got Jonathan Scope and Chris Davis. And it's a really solid infield. And behind the plate is really the unknown there. If we're going to include Wellington Castillo in that group, he's a guy who we don't know a whole lot about. But I do know that they liked his defense. That was a big part of why they wanted to bring him. That and he provides some offensive threat as well, but certainly, as you mentioned, a really good infield and the potential to take hits away. If the pitching staff keeps the ball on the ground, you kind of like their chances more often than not because these guys cover so much ground, particularly Hardy and Machado.
Machado obviously in his prime, Scope entering his prime, maybe Davis still there. Hardy's the one guy who's getting a little older. Has there been any signs over the last season or so that he's lost a step at all? I don't think the metrics point to that. Is he still as good defensively as he's been?
Yeah, he is. And actually, Buck joked today. He said, you know, I hope JJ has a really good year so I don't have to convince people to pick up his option. You know, that's how important he is to Buck and to the infield and to everything they do. He's really a steadying presence. He's not a flashy guy, so he doesn't really get the hype or the highlight reel plays. He'd prefer to make the hard plays look easy. And I don't think that there's – I haven't heard any talk of any kind of decline. I think they really like having him over there at shortstop.
So he's kind of the rock there at shortstop. And then there's other guys there that do make the spectacular play. One of those, obviously, Manny Machado. But as good as his defense is, Brittany, the offense just continues to get better and better. And now, you know, two straight All-Star games, three out of the last 4 years. Obviously, he didn't make it the year he was banged up in 2014. But when you look at him, 162 games played 2 years ago, 157 games played last year. Granted, he's only 24 years old. But is Buck going to try to find him a few more off days throughout the season?
Probably not. Buck will ride guys like him and Jonathan Scope. He loves saying, you know, they're young and bulletproof. You know, some of the older guys, J.J. Hardy, Davis Jones, sure, he'd love to get those guys off their feet, and he'll try. But Manny Machado, Jonathan Scope are going to play most of those games. They may only get two or three games off again because, again, they're young, they're bulletproof, and they can help this team win. And it's really hard to take a player like Manny Machado who has such an impact on both sides of the field. It's really hard to take him out of that lineup.
Yeah, when you look at Scope, we mentioned the games played for Machado. Scope played 162 games last year, you know, tying for the league lead, I guess is what you would call it. He's become that steadying force. And is he getting better? I mean, obviously, you look at the offense, 16 homers in 2014, 15 homers in 2015. He hits 25 last year, and the RBIs really jump. Is he getting better offensively? It seems like the one thing that's not there for him on the offensive side of things is on-base percentage. Do you think that can come since this is a guy who's just entering his year 25 season?
I do, and I think, you know, he's such a good young player, and it's unfortunate because he almost gets overshadowed a little bit by Machado because Machado is so good, and the two of them are such good friends. It's really fun to watch them interact. They were out there today joking around and laughing and taking some infield, and I think with Jonathan Scope, the best is yet to come. And, you know, when he came back in the second half of 2 years ago after that knee surgery that kept him out for a couple months, I don't think people realized how important he was. He came back, he homered in his first game. I remember it was maybe June or July in Chicago, and he was excellent. He's a really good young player, and he's got a lot of power. And I think he's a guy who's starting to learn to be a little bit more patient at the plate. He's starting to take some walks. And no matter where he hits in that lineup, he's always going to be a power threat. And he's been hitting big home runs for the Orioles. He's really good at Yankee Stadium. He's really good on the road. He's developed into a really nice young player. And we were actually talking about this today amongst the media, but who would you rather have second baseman-wise right now when you talk about that kind of power and that kind of youth and defense? I mean, he's got to be right up there.
Yeah, that's a great point with the youth, the athleticism, and the whole package. He's got to be considered one of the best in baseball. All right, that leaves us with Chris Davis. And obviously last year, Davis signed a huge contract, and he came in and he produced the power once again, Brittany. 38 home runs, 84 RBIs. The average is what it is with Chris Davis. He hit 221 last year, which was down from his huge 2015 season, but actually up from his 2014 season when he was under the Mendoza line. So you know what you're going to get with Chris Davis. You're going to get the power. Does he ever talk about trying to cut down on the strikeouts? Because he led the league in K's last year with 219, which was a career high for him. Does that enter his mind, or is he just that kind of hitter? And there's more value to that kind of hitter now than there used to be, I think, in baseball, that, hey, if you hit the home runs, we'll take the strikeouts. But is it something that he ever talks about?
He talks about it because we ask. I don't know if it's something that he would volunteer to talk about. But, you know, when he's going good, he'll joke about it some. But, you know, obviously when he's in slumps, it's something that becomes much more of a focal point. And I think at this stage, Tim, the guy is what he is. You know, he's going to hit 30-plus home runs for you, it seems like fairly consistently. And he's going to be a guy that's always capable, when he's hot, of carrying the Orioles in stretches. And he had a good year last year. It was overshadowed by what Mark Trumbo was able to do leading baseball. But Chris Davis still had a really solid year. And I think what he does is provide insurance for guys like Manny and Trumbo. We really can't pitch around any of these guys. You kind of have to pick your poison. And you don't want to put guys on base with these guys coming up. So I think with Davis, the strikeouts are just always going to be there. You know, you worry if you take that away and you tinker too much with his swing, does he become a flat ball hitter or a line drive hitter instead of that real true power threat, which is why they signed him and why they decided to pay him. So I think the strikeouts kind of come with it. Obviously, it's something where he doesn't want to continue to lead the league in that kind of statistic, but he's never going to be a guy who doesn't strike out often.
The amazing thing is that he struck out 219 times. He managed to walk 88 times. So it's not like he's not patient at times at the plate, but he is swinging for the home run much of the time. So there is the strikeouts, but there's the walks too, which help him get on base a little more often and certainly help the lineup turn over and all of that. All right, well, it's a great infield. There's no doubt about that. You'll have a hard time finding a better all-around infield in the majors, from the defense to the offense to the power, and they're certainly going to be exciting to watch again here in 2017. That's going to do it for this edition of MLB.com Extras. It's been our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Yankees reporter, Brian Hoke, who is on the backfield down in Tampa at spring training, checking out the action for the Yankees. And let's start right there, Brian. Obviously, pitchers and catchers and players are there. What's the early vibe in Tampa?
I think it's excitement. I think, you haven't seen a Yankee spring quite like this in a long time, where so many young players are coming into camp and have legitimate chances to break camp with the team. So I think there's optimism, there's excitement, and, Steinbrenner Field's undergoing renovations, too, as we speak. So I think there's a lot of new feeling around here. You don't have the Alex Rodriguez's, Derek Jeter's. That time has passed, and I think everybody's kind of looking forward to seeing what this next generation can do.
We're finishing off our breakdown of the Yankees roster with the bullpen. Before we get into that, though, the Yankees have made some moves. They named Masahiro Tanaka officially the opening day starter. No surprise there. They also officially made the Chris Carter deal a thing. Now, I want to run this by you, Brian, because the Chris Carter's free agency this offseason is kind of fascinating. First of all, that he was even a free agent after hitting 41 home runs a year ago, but the Brewers didn't want to spend the money on him in their rebuild, so they let him go, and then he's out there forever. And I look at the numbers that he puts up fairly consistently when he gets the opportunity. Is it crazy of me to think that Chris Carter is basically Chris Davis, but he just hasn't gotten the attention?
Well, you're the first person to make that comparison to me, but
I realize I'm going out there a little bit. But.
Yeah, a little bit, but you know what? Hey, spring training, it's a time for optimism. I think if that were the case, the Yankees would be thrilled. But, at $3.5 million, it's really hard to turn down a guy who did hit 41 home runs. I know, he's going to strike out a lot. The defense isn't terrific, but he's an upgrade over Tyler Austin, I think. They were going to come into camp thinking Greg Bird and Tyler Austin at first base as a lefty-righty platoon. And I think Carter provides some insurance for them. If Bird isn't completely healthy, ready for opening day, if Austin isn't going to make the Major League roster, if Matt Holliday has an injury problem the way he did last year, Carter can step in and DH for you. So I think he fills a lot of needs for the Yankees, but really it came down to the price. There was a certain amount that was left in the budget that they were willing to spend. They were actually looking more towards spending it on a relief pitcher, but, like I said, it's hard to turn down a guy who tied for the NL lead in home runs last year. So they'll bring Chris Carter into camp, and if it works out, great. And if not, it doesn't really kill their budget going forward for this year. So if he winds up being a Chris Davis-type guy and it's that kind of thing, and we're talking about it in September, I think Brian Cashman will look like a genius. But for right now, it just kind of fills a need for them, and they looked at it as money well spent.
Yeah, and the reason I bring up that comparison is just it's looking at the simple numbers, obviously, but Chris Davis hit 221 last year. Chris Carter hit 222. Chris Davis actually struck out more than Chris Carter. He also walked a little bit more. Davis, 38 home runs. Carter, 41 home runs. I mean, those old school numbers are almost identical. I think Chris Davis is a little better around the bag at first base, and there's other things. But it's just fascinating to me that Chris Carter was available for so long this offseason and had to settle for what he did coming off the year that he had, because those power numbers have been given so much value, you thought, the last couple years. But him and Mark Trumbo both kind of suffered a similar fate in the fact that the value just wasn't there of what they kind of thought it was. All right, let's get into the bullpen. And obviously it's going to be a good one again for the Yankees. It's not maybe at that three-headed monster level of a year ago, but there's still three really strong guys, two of them the same, obviously. Aroldis Chapman will be the closer. He's back. How thrilled is he back to be back in pinstripes with a ring, Brian?
Yeah, no kidding. I think that this was the perfect scenario for him. You know, I remember the day that he walked out of the Yankees clubhouse. They were in Houston, and he had just been traded to the Cubs. And you kind of got the feeling that he might go help the Cubs win a World Series. But I sensed that Chapman wanted to be in New York. He really enjoyed it. He appreciated it. Look, he came to the Yankees at a low point in his career. He was facing the suspension, and they embraced him. They worked with him. He served that suspension, came back, pitched pretty well for the Yankees. You look at the numbers, more than pretty well. I think that he felt that this was home for him. The Marlins were one of the teams that looked into signing him, and that was geographically home for him. He lives down in Miami, but this was where he wanted to be. I think he had found a home here, and he felt comfortable. And, yeah, you look at that Yankee bullpen, and it's not no runs DMC anymore. I haven't come up with a cute moniker for them yet, but Tyler Clipper, Dellin Betances, Aroldis Chapman, that's a pretty good 7-8-9. If you have a lead going into the seventh inning, you still feel pretty good about that.
And how about Betances? Obviously, he's been lights out at times, and he's got the all-star appearances the last few years. There was a few times last year when he wasn't quite as maybe as dominant, although I feel like that's not even fair to say with the strikeout rate that this guy has. But if he was forced to close, let's throw that out. Are the Yankees confident that he could be the closer, say if, you know, Chapman got hurt? I hate to say something like that. But is there confidence that Betances can close, or do they just think he's the eighth inning guy?
They think he could. You know, he got a little taste of it at the end of last year, and the results really weren't there. I don't know if you want to look at that and say it was a matter of pressure of the ninth inning, or if it was maybe just fatigue, because he did look fatigued late in the season, and he's got a lot of innings on his arm over the last 3 years. But I think they think he could do it, but the fact that they were so adamant that they wanted to go out and sign Chapman and did it so quickly and gave him the money they gave him, I think that spoke volumes to me as well as far as their confidence in Betances. And I think that he's proven he can be a great setup man. He hasn't proven he can be a great closer yet, so why not go out and spend the money on a great closer?
Absolutely. And then you have Tyler Clippard, who was so good with the Yankees in 2016. He wasn't as good before he came over when he was with the Diamondbacks. What changed for him when he came over to the Yankees? Because you would think he was actually in a tougher spot pitching in the American League East.
You would think, but you know, he came over and pitched pretty well. For some reason, sometimes the change of scenery just seems to kick in. I think that Clippard, he came up in the Yankee organization, so I'm sure there was some familiarity there. But I think they were just in a situation where the Yankees, there wasn't a whole lot riding on the season at that point. I think a lot of people had counted them out, and it took a backseat, obviously, to the Gary Sanchez show. But they were playing well above 500 ball. The bullpen synced together pretty well. All the guys that they brought in, Adam Warren, Tommy Lane, these guys were picked up in midseason, plugged into the bullpen, and they really helped keep the Yankees in it into the last week of December. So I think that Clippard, he's gone to All-Star games. He's got a good track record. I think that you look at him and you say he's our seventh inning guy. I think he should feel pretty good about that.
You mentioned Adam Warren and Tommy Lane, and there's a whole bunch of other names that can factor in. Is this bullpen, are there spots available for guys to fight for, or is it pretty much kind of set on paper what it's going to look like?
No, I think there's definitely competition. I think that there's going to be spillover from the rotation part. You've got five and maybe more guys competing for the last two spots there. So I think that Warren could begin season in rotation. He could be in the bullpen. You could say the same thing about Luis Severino, Luis Sessa, Chad Green, Brian Mitchell. These guys could all probably do either one. So I think that some of the guys who don't win the rotation battle are going to probably wind up in the bullpen and serve as a long reliever or maybe a multi-inning guy. Some of them are going to go down to AAA and start, but they've got a lot of names they're excited about too. In camp, you've got Jonathan Holder and Johnny Barbato, who made the opening day roster a year ago. There's going to be a lot of competition in this camp. James Kaprielian could work his way into the mix. So there are names that the Yankees are excited about. You know, Larry Rothschild was saying that this might be the best collection of young arms that he's had in his time as the Yankees pitching coach. So, you know, you always talk about the optimism and sunshine of spring training, but the Yankees have it this year down here in Tampa, and they think the future is very bright.
Brian, you mentioned Luis Severino, and here's a guy that was obviously great 2 years ago, and you thought by this point he'd be kind of a fixture in that rotation. 2016 wasn't so good for Severino. Obviously, all kinds of struggles. He ended up back down in the minor leagues. Does there come a point here where the Yankees need to make a decision? Because he pitched out of the bullpen a little bit last year. Is this guy going to be a starter, or is he going to be a bullpen guy long-term? And Do they need to make up their minds on that soon?
It could be, but, you know, let's remember Severino's very young, and I think that he would be far from the first pitcher ever to come up, have some success, have some struggles, and then come back to try and figure it out. So he's made some adjustments, went down to the Dominican Republic. He's trying to find his changeup. The Yankees told him, don't bulk up so much this offseason, work more on flexibility. He actually enlisted the help of Pedro Martinez, called him up, got a mutual friend, and they got together on several occasions to work out together. And I think if I was a young right-hander looking to find a changeup, Pedro would be one of the first people that I'd try to call too. So I think that, look, if that rubs off, that's terrific for Severino, but it's there. I think it's there. He had 11 starts at the end of 2015 and looked really, really good. I don't know what happened last year. He looked great out of the bullpen, so you know that he could do that if he had to. But starting pitching is so valuable. The Yankees are going to need some of these young kids to step up. And I think in Severino's case, it's right there for him. He can grab one of these spots. I would think he's got the inside track for one of them. If not, he'll go down to AAA. They won't start him in the bullpen. So they do look at him as a starter. Whether he begins the season in New York or in Scranton, that's up to him. But he will be a starter to begin the season.
Because we've certainly seen that he can do it at the major league level when he's right. All right, great stuff as always, Brian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.
Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Rays reporter, Bill Chastain, who is down in Port Charlotte with the Rays, whose pitchers and catchers have reported getting to work on spring training 2017. We will finish off our coverage of the Rays roster. We'll break down the catching situation as well as the designated hitting options. But before that, we should start with some news, Bill. And as far as this week goes, Nathan Eovaldi is now a Ray. Now, obviously, here's a guy who had Tommy John surgery in August. Not likely to pitch this season, although who knows, maybe in September if everything goes well. But it's an interesting move for the Rays. They pay him $2 million this year to rehab, but then they have an option to have him next year. Seems like one of those kind of interesting, neat moves by the Rays that maybe trying to outthink the competition a little bit to get their hands on this guy before he's ready to pitch.
Totally agree. I mean, I think the way to look at this is it's an investment on the Rays' part. You're obviously not going to get anything this year, but you cash in that club option for $2 million and he pitches next year, or you have him, you know, available to pitch or trade or do whatever you want to do with him. But, you know, he pitched some good games for the Yankees, so this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's too bad. He actually was pitching some of his best baseball when the injury occurred last year. It seemed like he had kind of figured some things out. I thought it was interesting in his remarks, Bill, that he referenced the fact that he's always heard about the Rays training staff and their ability to deal with injuries, and that was one of the things that kind of led him towards Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and you think about it, this time last year, you know, they had Chase Whitley coming back from injury with them, and of course they were teammates with the Yankees. So the good word gets out, and you know, what they're saying about the Rays, you know, and the medical staff gets out around the players.
Yeah, it just shows you that everything matters as far as a franchise goes, from the clubhouse staff all the way through the training staff and, of course, the team. You also have a story up on the website right now about Jose De Leon, obviously a guy that the Rays traded for recently, who will be in the competition as far as that starting rotation goes, a highly coveted prospect. And he had some good things to say about coming over and his mental, I guess, where he's at mentally joining a new franchise.
Yeah, and I was impressed with what he had to say about competing. You know, he's not like, you know, I got to compete against this guy or that guy. It's like, I just got to compete with myself, and whatever they decide, they decide. I'd be surprised if he makes the team out of camp based on kind of what they've done with some of their younger arms in the past. At the very least, I think he would start at AAA before they brought him up. But, you know, I'm eager to see what he looks like out there. I've heard some good things about him, and he really seems like a nice kid.
Yeah, he got a cup of coffee with the Dodgers last year in the major leagues, but spent most of his season in the minors. We actually had him on the Pipeline podcast, Bill, the week before he was traded, and we talked to him about all the trade rumors that were occurring at that time, because they had actually kind of slowed down a little bit. And he talked, even then, he was very positive about the whole experience and how he considers it a compliment when teams are talking about acquiring you. And he was really good on the Pipeline podcast, and seems
like, doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, he's got everything going in the right direction right now, and a bright future for Jose De Leon. All right, let's get into the catchers and DH spots for this Rays team. when you talk about catchers, you have to talk about Wilson Ramos, obviously, who the team acquired in the offseason, but who won't be catching at least anytime soon. But that is his position, and eventually you would think he'll be the guy. Have you heard anything from Wilson Ramos recently about where he's at?
Actually, we were just kind of sitting around waiting to talk to him. He just showed up today. You know, I've heard speculation anywhere from May to July as far as when he might, you know, get in the lineup. You know, obviously they'd be looking at him as a DH first, and that would help, you know, the offense right there just because the bat he swings. So, you know, I think the Rays have to look at what they need to do until they get him. And so right now I think it's pretty much Luke Maley and Kurt Casale. Looks like those two would probably be the top two guys going into the season.
And how does that go as far as the spring goes? Is that an open competition between those guys? Who performs the best can win the starting job, and the other guy will be the backup?
You know what? The way the Rays split the catching, I don't really think there's, you know, I think they'll say there's a job to be won, but they probably have it pretty much decided right now between those two. And of course, there's always, particularly playing catcher, there's always a chance of an injury. Or who knows, if the music stops and Matt Wieters is still standing there, who knows, maybe they take a flyer on a year with Matt Wieters. If they can afford him for a year. So it's an interesting position. I do think that they're heading into the season with a better situation than last year because one of the catchers last year really was suspect defensively. And, you know, that was, as we all know, it's Hank Conger. And I think that extended more even to the pitching, worrying about runners getting on base. If Conger was behind the plate, you know, they just kind of assumed he was already on second. So I do think that the defense on, you know, behind the plate is going to help a lot from the start.
Yeah, when your team is based and the strength of your team is that starting rotation in the bullpen, you got to have the defense first, catcher, and either of those guys could certainly do the job. Wieters is interesting, and he stays out there, still available, and it would be interesting because when you think about the designated hitter spot, if they did bring in Wieters and then they have Ramos eventually gets healthy, that could almost be an interesting rotation of those guys for a season. Obviously, Ramos not going to be able to catch for a while, but it would give Wieters a chance to get some days off as well. Who else is in the mix? Assuming Wieters does not become a Ray here in the next couple weeks, who else will be in the mix at DH other than Wilson Ramos?
Well, right now it's going to be Corey Dickerson. I'd be pretty sure about that. Although I wouldn't be surprised to see him get some reps in the outfield too, because you know, he really looks great. He's lost 25 pounds. He's at 200 pounds, and you know, and he really finished the season strong. But right now, I'd say he was your DH, and you know, maybe Corey Rasmus on occasional days, and who knows, maybe even Matt Duffy on occasional days. So I think they're going to use, I think you look at Dickerson as your top guy, but I also think that you're going to look at some other guys there as kind of a day when they can get off their feet and just hit.
How about the situation at first base? Does that factor into the DH at all with Logan Morrison there and Brad Miller, who was set on being a first baseman before Morrison came in? You know, do those guys get at-bats in DH as well as the rotation goes, or are they set over there on the right side?
Yeah, and I should have mentioned Morrison there because I think you'll see him there more than you would see Miller, because I think Miller could see some time at second as well as at first base.
There's certainly a roster that, as the offseason has gone and we've gotten closer and closer to the season build, seems to get more and more, there's diversity there, that Kevin Cash is going to have a lot of players to move around, and I know the Rays have always embraced that kind of a roster, and it's shaping up to be just the kind of roster that Rays fans are kind of used to, I guess.
Oh, totally, and flexibility is, you know, that's totally what, positional flexibility is totally what the Rays are into, and they got a lot of guys who can play a lot of different positions.
Any other first impressions, Bill, from your first week, I guess, down in Port Charlotte?
No, I think a lot of guys have shown up early. They look good, you know, ready to put last year behind them. And, you know, you do get a nice whiff of young players. So and I think young is good. So I like what I've seen so far.
And I know Kevin Cash said in his first comments that he expects this team to be playing baseball in October. So the bar is set high for this team, and there is some talent there. Some things will certainly have to break the right way, but spring training is underway. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Rays edition. For Bill Chastain, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Red Sox reporter, Ian Brown. Ian, pitchers and catchers and you have reported to Fort Myers, Florida for the beginning of spring training. I guess First off, we've seen Chris Sale in uniform here. You can check out video on MLB.com. We've seen Pablo Sandoval training at the complex in the cage, still looking great. What are your first impressions of Fenway South so far this spring?
Yeah, no, everybody, you know, I think that this time of year, optimism reigns supreme. But, you know, there are a couple real reasons for optimism. You hit a couple of them. You bring in Chris Sale, a five-time All-Star, to an already pretty good team that's going to create excitement. And he couldn't help him. The first day I was here, which is 4 or 5 days before the official reporting date, you saw Sale throwing a side session alongside Rick Porcello, last year's Cy Young winner, and David Price, another five-time All-Star. So to see those three guys, you know, throwing side by side by side, it kind of brings to light what kind of pitching staff this team will have. And also, I think it was that same day or maybe the day before, I saw Pablo Sandoval, and he just looks, I can't overstate it, the guy just looks tremendous. He looks like a different person, and it's clear he made some real lifestyle changes. You know, the thing that was always a little misunderstood about Pablo was he was always a hard worker. He was always a guy who would, you know, put a lot of sweat in the gym. It was just that obviously the nutrition was the missing link there. And, you know, it's clear that he's taken that seriously this winter, the way he's come in, the way he looks right now.
All right, so that's kind of the state of the team right now. As far as our trip through the roster goes, all we have left here is the bullpen. So let's get into that a little bit. And obviously it starts with the closer, Craig Kimbrell. And he is what he is. He had some slip-ups in 2016, some outings when you kind of scratched your head, and then you found out he wasn't fully healthy at times. But then he was certainly his typical dominant self for much of the season. Is that what we expect to see again in 2017? Is Craig Kimbrell going to be Craig Kimbrell?
I think so. You know, again, it's just kind of much like David Price last year. I think just, you know, the topsy-turviness of coming to Boston and, you know, dealing with all that for the first time, I think just threw him for a little bit of a loop. And like Price, he still performed at pretty much a high level. It just wasn't quite what people were used to in the past. And, you know, Kimbrell is a kind of a creature of habit. You know, this is the guy who was traded right before the last season started in 2015 to the Padres. Then he had to get used to that. Then he came to Boston. So it's just kind of a tough year or two for him. But he looked totally settled now and fully expect that he will have a big year for this team.
So he's the closer. I guess there's somewhat of a question mark as far as setup man goes. I mean, they go out. Obviously, they trade for Tyler Thornburg from the Brewers, and he's a guy that has that kind of arm. You have Joe Kelly. You have a lot of names there. Who do you see, if you had to kind of handicap it right now, who is the setup man? Is that why Thornburg's in Boston?
Yeah, and the reason they traded for Thornburg and they gave up Travis Shaw and some pretty decent prospects to get him is so he could pitch the eighth inning. So he did it last year in Milwaukee. He was very good at it. So if he pitches like that again, I would fully expect he will get the eighth inning. Then you have a pretty good second cast there with Joe Kelly, who just threw the heck out of the ball at the end of last year. Matt Barnes, kind of an underrated guy who you don't think of as much. And Robbie Ross had a really good year last year. So, you have some guys who can throw the baseball down there and that they feel pretty good about. The Red Sox feel good about their bullpen because, look, they got a bunch of guys, 4 or 5 guys, who throw 95-plus and should be, you know, a very good bullpen.
Yeah, you like to have those power arms down there. Now, Carson Smith was obviously a big addition a year ago in the offseason, and then the Tommy John surgery comes in, and they didn't have that guy. And there was definitely times in 2016 where you could tell that, hey, they had planned on having Carson Smith out there in the bullpen, and he wasn't there. Obviously, coming off Tommy John surgery is a tough thing that takes time. What kind of a timetable is he working on?
With Carson Smith, yeah, I would expect June or July coming off the Tommy John. He is throwing the ball off flat ground right now. He's one of the first people who was at camp. And, you know, they're just not going to rush him because they do have a good bullpen. So they'll make sure. But he can be a really good weapon for this team. Sidewinder with that funky motion. So I think he could, you know, really help them down the stretch.
Yeah, that's a good point. He has such the weird delivery. And I would think when you're coming back from elbow surgery like that, and everyone that comes back from Tommy John surgery, it seems like the command, the control is kind of the last thing that comes. You get the arm strength, you get the velocity, but you can't quite control it. Here's a guy that has that funky delivery. Do you almost have to plan that maybe it might take him a little longer because of that?
I don't know if there's any correlation there with delivery. I think you just kind of like any guy coming off Tommy John, you know, you see how he responds. And some guys, it takes them 12 months. Some guys, it takes them 14. And every case is different. And you just hope that he is on the speedier side. I know he's worked really hard to come back. So let's monitor it as it comes there with Carson.
Now, Fernando Abad is a guy that they traded for at the deadline. He was dominant in Minnesota, especially as far as being a lefty guy, but he just didn't have that success once he came over to the Red Sox all the time. What's the expectation for him? Do the Red Sox still like what they traded for?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, they're going to have to evaluate that in spring training. And you know, there's no guarantees to make this team, because you look at Robbie Scott, and this is a great story of a guy who came from independent league baseball, and he pitched very well when he came up last year. He's 27 years old, I think, but he's really driven to try to make the team too. And, you know, with arbitration guys, the salary is not guaranteed. So if they don't like what they see from Fernando, they could cut him loose. This is a really important spring training for Fernando to kind of prove that he can be that guy that he was with Minnesota last year.
Then I guess the other factor that kind of goes into the bullpen equation is you have that battle for the sixth spot in the rotation. And somebody's going to lose out, or I guess the fourth and fifth spot in that rotation, but somebody's going to miss out. So does that throw another body into the bullpen, or does it depend on who loses that job for the fifth and fourth spots?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, Tim, you got to make sure all these guys get through healthy. You know, we looked at it on, you know, on February 11th or 12th or whatever today is, and, you know, oh, how are we going to fit all these guys in these spots? And you get, then 2 weeks later, somebody's going to have a shoulder soreness, or, you know, I know Stephen Wright is still trying to make it back from that injury he had last year, and Drew Pomeranz had some elbow soreness at the end of the year. So you just, you know, you want to make it through healthy, and you hope that you have that glut where you're like, okay, we have to put a Drew Pomeranz or an Eduardo Rodriguez or a Stephen Wright, we have to put one of these guys in that bullpen. That's the problem you really hope you do have, because it means that all your pitchers are healthy.
You mentioned Joe Kelly a little bit earlier, and here's a guy who was obviously a starter and at times a successful starter, and then it was kind of back and forth bullpen starter as far as his roles go. Being in a position where he knows he's set to pitch in the bullpen, that's going to be his job. How beneficial can that be for him, instead of kind of wanting to be a starter but having to pitch out of the bullpen, just knowing his role?
Yeah, I think it's very beneficial. And Joe, I think he just looks a lot more comfortable. You know, Joe's a pretty loose guy anyway, so he always seems comfortable, but I think that it is going to help him, knowing that, like, he can simplify things now. Like, just going to worry about locking down that seventh inning or that eighth inning or whatever it is and throwing the heck out of the ball. And he doesn't have to think a lot now, and he can basically be a two-pitch pitcher. So I think Joe Kelly is going to do very well. He was their best pitcher in that playoff series against Cleveland last year. He was the guy who performed the best in that whole series. So you hope that he carries that over into this year.
Yeah, and he's certainly one of those guys that can add a couple ticks to an already impressive radar gun when he's coming out of the pen and really hit those upper 90s. And you mentioned all the guys in that bullpen that can. It should be a strong bullpen. Of course, bullpens are kind of the toughest thing to figure out in baseball. But when you look around the American League, I mean, there's not too many on paper that are better than this Red Sox group.
No, they look really good. They have a lot of different ways you can attack. And like I said, the best part is all the hard throwers. You could call on a guy to get a key strikeout with first and third and one out, and you're doing pretty good. And they haven't had that as much. You know, they had kind of a finesse bullpen with Koji and Tozawa and Brad Ziegler and some of these guys, and now they're going to just go the more traditional way or the way that's been really picking up steam the last few years. And just guys that could really light up that radar gun. And it worked, obviously, for the Royals. It's worked for the Cubs. It worked for Cleveland. So that seems to be a recipe for success these days.
It should be a fun group to watch. All right, great stuff as always, Ian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.